The podcast you are about to listen to discusses comic books and comic book related media. Be warned, the following will review art, plot, and themes, and will therefore contain spoilers of the materials discussed. Welcome to Comics League International. Episode talking about Starman.
Yeah, Starman.
Yeah. So I'm Brent. I've read Starman many times. I started with trades as the series was finishing up. I was in college, and a friend just kind of passed me the book, saying like, "This is something you would love," mm-hmm. and my friend was right. So I've bought this in some issues. I bought it in trades, and then when they put out the omnibuses recently, that the gorgeous hardcover omnibuses, I pounced on those. So I've bought the series basically three times now. Haven't regretted any of it.
I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah, I'm a sucker.
Okay.
But they're so pretty.
They are. I mean, I like the art a lot. It reminds me of pop art.
Yeah.
I really like that. I like pop art a lot. But sad to say, the first time that I've ever touched a Starman comic was when you sent them to me, which is like, what, a few days ago?
A few days ago, yeah. less than a week, yeah. Lydia, we've read some comics together, and I thought, You know what? You're fun to talk with, and because you don't... Yeah. Come from the background of reading, you know, like English comics, mm-hmm. that I think you'd probably like have a fresh take on some of the stuff that goes on here. And
oh, it's fresh.
I'm trying to think of a smell joke, but I can't. Like flowers, it's, I don't know,
manure.
Fresh manure. God bless it. But yeah, so this time we're going to be talking about the issue zero, Falling Zero. Star, Rising Sun.
Yes.
By James Robinson, who the writer, and Tony Harris, mm-hmm. The artist we've talked about. Also, fantastic inks by Wade Von Graubadger. I don't really know how to say that name.
Badger? And
ooh, yeah, Graubadger?
No idea, but it's like Graubadger. Pokemon.
Graubadger. We'll get into the different stuff, I know, but you know, just to give a shout out, because I think in this book we got to give props to a John E. Workman who did the letters in the book, and also mm-hmm. Gregory Wright who did the colors, because the lettering and the colors in this book are fantastic.
Okay.
So just before I let Lydia get into the synopsis of the issue, one thing I just kind of want to do a little bit of talking about is just how this issue zero is the story of Starman and the Knight family. David and Jack, they had one previous appearance, which was in Zero Hour issue one. And basically, it's in one page, you have an older Ted Knight basically mm-hmm. saying, like, "Hey, you can become Starman, David." And David's like, "Wow, I'll become Starman." And Jack is going, "Hey, good thing I don't have to become Starman." Mm-hmm. And it's just one kind of throwaway panel that sets it up.
Mm-hmm. And that's in another comic?
That's in another comic. Zero Hour, I've only... Oh, it's been a long time since I've even flipped through it. All I really understand about Zero Hour is big bad fighting in DC Comics, and you had a group... So you've got the main group of DC heroes, the Justice League, and then you've got the older DC heroes, the Justice Society. Ooh. And one of the things that Zero Hour served to do was to kind of clean house, and... Mm. you know, get rid of most of the Justice Society members. So it kind of upset some of the people reading or fans of Justice Society because it did kind of, hey, here's all these great characters who have been around for, you know, 50, 60 years. let's just kill them real simply.
Out with the old, in with the new.
Basically, Ted Knight wasn't killed. He was just made really, really old.
Oh, okay.
So you could, like, probably up to his, like, 80s or 90s. So you could kind of say maybe Starman, they kind of, like, pulled that back in a little bit.
Okay. I see.
But, yeah, that was kind of the story beforehand. And I don't really know what Tony Harris was doing before this. I think this was maybe his biggest thing to that date. And James Robinson had kind of made a name for himself writing both... he's an English writer, but writing in English, writing in England. And also, I think before this, the biggest thing he wrote was a comic called The Golden Age, which was a graphic novel dealing with nostalgia heroes in the Golden Age. And it's fantastic and really... you know, earns him his place as one of the guys who you get to write comics where dealing with history of characters is important. So that's that's a little bit of history of this. And then just, I guess, this came out in October of 94. And we had some historical events going on there. You know, this is a part we kind of want to do in the show where we talk a little bit about the history of each month. And October of 94 was actually really, really boring if you just look by the history books.
Boring.
Showboat opens at the Gershwin Theater in New York City.
Yay. Wrong musical.
Yeah. Keith Moore is charged with stealing $5 million from Sting.
$5 million?
Yeah. scrolling through this, some of the only stuff that, like, you may be like, oh, I kind of remember that, was Gary Larson, who did the Far Side cartoons, announced that he was going to retire. And I loved the Far Side. And think all of those who were not old enough to read it are much younger than me.
Not going to comment.
You're so young. And we had famous deaths. Raul Julia, who most people know either as M. Bison from Street Fighter or Gomez Adams from the Adams Family movies, he died in that time, and that was sad because I remembered him from both of them and thought he was awesome.
Yes. Did you do something with the accent there?
Yes, I did. I said awesome because that's how awesome he was. You got to stretch it out there.
Awesome. Yeah. I remember him. Yes, thanks to you, I remember him.
And I guess the only other stuff I have about October 94 is in music. We had, if you remember the Cranberries and their song Zombie, that album, No Need to Argue, was... put out in October, and it went 7 times platinum in the U.S.
And 5 times in Canada and Europe. Canada.
Did you do something with your accent there?
No.
And also, the first Korn album called Korn came out. And music changed... I don't know, a little bit. And then, I don't know, Korn kind of continued, but I stopped paying attention after the second album.
I was just thinking, wouldn't it be funny if their first album was called Maze?
Spelled with the I, or...
No, I mean, if it weren't spelled with the I, it would be even funnier because it would be like, you know, Maze was a mysterious, but then they're called Korn with a K, so... Okay, I'm not going anywhere, but this is too much. Sorry, that just came to me. We are not GM modified.
Fabulous.
We are not a GM food. That could be, like, in...
I like it. That should be their slogan.
We are not genetically modified corn. Joe needs to start. Stop, Lydia. Stop.
I can't wait to see what you're going to do with the synopsis.
Please don't have high hopes for it. I'll start with it if we are ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. So, synopsis. Starman issue 0.
Dun dun dun.
Okay, from what I know, issue zeros are usually like, you know, backstory and I don't know, things that are like you can skip issue 0 and it's fine. But for Starman, issue 0 was like it was the beginning of the story. So that was new for me. Like that was oh, so everything I've learned about comics is false. but no, that's not it. I guess that was what the authors, well, the creators tried to do. So I respect that. And so issue 0 is the beginning of Starman, and you see Starman on a building, and then I'm just going to skip to the part where he dies, because that happens in 3 panels. It happens in the first 3 to 4 panels of the comic. Starman, you get introduced to Starman. He is this superhero of Opal City, and then he dies. He gets shot and he falls off a building. Okay. So, in the next few pages, we are introduced to Starman's family, namely his father and his brother. And we learn from their conversation that his father is a retired superhero and he has passed on the title of Starman to David, who is, like, you know, Starman's original persona. So David, he has a brother called Jack, and Jack is kind of like he's like the odd one out. He does not really embrace the whole Starman in my family thing. He's like, and he kind of insults Starman and gets his dad really upset. So we see some sort of like family scene and the dynamics of the three men. I don't see any moms or sisters in this, so I'm presuming that they are the only ones left. And so these three guys, they have a tense relationship. That's what I gather from those few panels. And then we move on. We see that Jack. So now the story shifts to Jack. Jack is the owner of, I think it looks like an antique store in an alley in one of those, you know, what do you call it? Alleyways. If you're a Harry Potter fan, you would like imagine that little street where dark magic or dark objects are sold. So it's like the, you know, the shady places with tattoo parlors and, you know, stuff like that. So anyways, he owns a shop in an area like this. Oh, like Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah. You know,
you're familiar with Marvel. And then he owns a place in the, so you would, oh, you're so over here I'm like, okay, so something's gonna happen because he works in a place like that. And so obviously, okay, so the story now shifts to him being in his store, and his dad tells him that his brother is dead. And then after, well, his dad calls him, and after his dad hangs up the phone, there's like a huge explosion over at his dad's. And his dad, you see his dad, well, I thought his dad was dead because he fell on the floor and something struck his head. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I thought that his dad was dead. And then back at his store, Jack, he's like, oh, my brother's dead. I should feel something, but I don't. And then this stranger comes into the store, and this stranger like strikes up this mysterious conversation with him, and then the stranger starts to shoot at him. I'm like, what is this? And he's like, okay, so this is not your regular customer. And he starts to, like, and Jack gets shot, And he's reaching for this box because his dad told him in the conversation very conveniently a few minutes before that there was some superhero things in the box. And he was like stretching to reach it. And then obviously the villain kicks the box and he doesn't reach them. And well, okay, so as the villain kicks the box, one of those superhero things conveniently falls out of it just within his reach. And obviously the villain has to kick that superhero thing and it flies away. Alright, okay, so but anyway, there's a lot of drama in this. So everything is on fire and then we see the villain shoots, but and he throws a grenade, but and you think like Jack is gonna die, but of course, there's the other superhero thing that he manages to land his hands on, and he flies out of the building with that superhero thing, which looks conveniently, I use the word conveniently a lot, which looks a lot like a lollipop shaped like, I want to say a penis, am I It really does look like one. It's a phallic thing. Okay. And then, so the drama is over, and then we cut to the scene of that villain. He goes home to his mom and dad. That is so strange. I have no... Okay, so it's like, to me, when I saw this scene, I was like, are they vampires? Because it was like in this dark room. Mm-hmm. And then his mom and dad, they were drinking wine and from a goblet. And then they were like, so... his place is destroyed. The boss was large, and then. But anyway, to me, this was really weird. But that built up a lot of like you know, drama in the story as well. Because like, who are these people? They are so mysterious, and if they are supernatural, that would be very interesting. So, but basically, they have some sort of feud with Jack and David's dad. Because they said, oh, take away stuff from the knights or something like that. So, yes. And then basically the story ends with Jack, you know, he's injured and with that phallus lollipop. And he's like in the alley, in that shady alley, and he's like, oh, I need to get to my dad. He'll know what to do. After all, with my brother gone, he's Starman. And I'm not. That's it.
Nice.
I'm sorry that was too long.
No, that was inspired. That was, maybe a little long, but the energy was there.
Didn't cut.
Yeah. Well, I have no idea how. But you know, I think if people can't get behind that energy, I don't know what to offer them. The only thing is, it's not clear in this, and I only really know because I have, like I said, read this several times before. It's not when the bad guy goes home, it's not his parents.
Oh, it's, really?
Yeah, you've got the bad guy and the woman there is actually his sister.
Oh.
And the old creepy looking guy is their dad.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So it's not like said in this issue really.
Okay.
But we know the girl's name is Nash, the son's name is Kyle. Mm. And I don't think they actually say the man's name.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean you can tell we're gonna be doing spoilers for what's in the issue, but I think one thing I'll certainly try and do is not give spoilers for upcoming issues.
So
once with this zero, we're gonna talk anything that's in issue zero. But you know, I'm not gonna be like, oh, by the way, in issue 73 happens. Who knew that was gonna happen? Because that's not cool. Hopefully, we'll get through all 80 issues of this series. Plus all the specials and things like that, because that is our goal. Okay. We just don't want to cross the timeline.
Okay, and I guess since we're going to approach it like this, I'm going to be that reader who does not read past the issue that we're going to talk about.
Nice.
Because I'm currently, I've currently only completed issue zero. So until our next podcast, our next episode, I will stop at one, and then when we're done with that, I'll do two.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the meat. Let's jump into the discussion.
Okay.
I guess first off, that's a beautiful cover.
Mm.
I mean, just right away to have that, like, that painted looking cover with the kind of the, what do you call it, like the sailor's compass, with like the different arcane signs in it.
Right.
It's like, huh, this Starman seems a bit more astrology than science, but there's that rod, which is kind of science-y. I just like it.
You know how when I told you just now how it's very pop art inside?
Yeah.
The cover is not.
No, anything it really like it. Isn't.
Yeah, so it's very... I like the colors. And when I first saw the colors, by the way, are mostly purple. So I don't know why that was very interesting for me, because to use one, I guess, you know how sometimes there are filters for things, and then you know, on Instagram and stuff like that, and then they kind of color the entire thing orange or green, and this one, it's almost as if there's a filter on it. It's like this moody, gloomy kind of purple. It's dark, but it's Starman. You know, when I first heard Starman, I thought of Super Mario. So, you know, that difference in... The difference was really strange. To see something like Starman, and then to see, like, this moody purple cover, it was something.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, it's kind of interesting to see this Starman. Like, the cover is almost a spoiler of the comic in a way, because, you know, I mean, because we don't see, like, we don't see this image, we don't see this, the character at this stage, in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know,
I get what you mean.
Yeah. But I guess then again, if you had, like, the other, if you had David on the cover...
Right.
First, it's the red and green, which may not be as cool and hip, and he dies really soon, so...
Yeah, that was too fast.
And, you know, just to point it out there, the cover, also by Tony Harris.
Oh.
So, yeah.
So he drew the pictures both in and inside and on the comic?
Yeah, he did the pencil art for the inside of the comic, and I'm pretty sure the covers are painted.
Oh, cool. Okay. I have no concept of how comics are colored. So
I know the inside of the comics coloring. I'm not sure how it was in 94, but I know they had like a separate person whose job was just to color.
Whoa. Okay.
But yeah, let's if I start talking about the meat and the potatoes of it, I'm gonna get stuff wrong, so
okay.
But it's beautifully colored.
That's true. No. What do you want to talk about?
I guess, like, right away, one of the things that struck me looking at this now is from the opening pages, there's really a sense of, like, how much of a character Opal City itself is going to be in this book.
Okay.
Like, to have that whole first page just to, like, here's the city with sunset going on, and we kind of see, like, modern buildings kind of in the distance, but we also have lots of the, like, you know, old-fashioned-y architecture and that kind
of
pop arty,
you know, gargoyles and...
Yeah.
And, like, you know, what do you call those? Centurions?
Yeah.
Yeah. Victorian-ish.
Yeah. And I don't know, just, I think that really sets up, this is going, like, you need to know who Opal City is.
Yeah. I agree. It's almost They are trying to blend. They are trying to make the, excuse me, city.
No problem.
A character as well.
Mm.
So, and the number of times that they mention Opal City, like Opal City, there are quite a. It's like you don't hear a lot of. I don't know. Do you like do cities get mentioned like this? Like they're casually name dropping Opal City.
I mean, I think you could probably say that. Like, I feel like New York is name dropped a lot. Like, if something's set in New York, they really want you to know it's set in New York.
Mm.
And I kind of, well, I don't know if Tokyo is kind of the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, yeah, as far as mystique, like, I feel like maybe Paris and New York, and maybe, I don't know, maybe London, maybe?
Mm.
But it's just cities that are like, no, this is a city.
It's kind of like Daredevil and Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
They keep, I care for this part of, you know, New York City, so.
And that's another thing where the environment of the story is almost, like, central to, you know, this action may not happen outside of this area.
Right. Yes. Yes. The field remains within these walls.
Exactly.
Yeah. I see.
So, okay. poor David.
I didn't get to know him very well, but... But that was that part. The only time, I think, apart from the words that ran through his mind before he died, there was that conversation between there was that conversation with his dad and his brother, and he seems to not be on good terms with Jack. He seems to be jealous, and ever since I was a kid, Jack took everything. I mean, always ends up taking everything. So
nah, I mean, definitely that's like that scene where it's just the family talking. There's not a sitcom family where everyone's going to be like, okay, and now we're going to sit down and share a hug. Like, it feels real and stylized dysfunction at the same time.
Yeah. I'm just going to go out and say that Dave, he seems really childish. He's like, I mean, how old are he? Looks like he's an adult, and he's like bitching about his brother in front of his brother, saying like, everything I owe is going to go to you.
Yeah,
trying to get my old stuff off me. That's not his voice. But it really sounds like.
No, he does. Neither of these guys really, because even Jack like was like, "What, you're gonna be Starman? That's lame."
Right.
Yeah, you know, you're just a loser. Anyone who wears that dorky outfit sucks.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. And Dad, judging by Dad's appearance, Dad looks really old. So these two might just be what in their late 20s and early 30s at the least. Yeah,
they've got to be like at the youngest. They've got to be, like, maybe Jack's, like, mid-20s, and Dave's, like, late-20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because, oof, but still.
Yeah, but the thing is, we do see that they are kind of close in a way, because they have dinner every Sunday. And even though, you know, Ted Knight was like, oh, you insulted us, I don't want to see you, get out. And he's like, no, but Dad, no, get out. And then Jack says, but I'll see you on Sunday for dinner, as usual. Mm. Like, there's that. I want my dad to think that I'm a good kid.
Yeah. And just, it kind of makes me wonder, like, is the Sunday dinner, like, maybe that's, you know, I mean, like, maybe that's something, a tradition that was started when their mom was still around.
Right.
And, you know, that, like, that's something they do kind of in memory of the mother. Like, I don't know, because it seems more important than I would almost imagine these three guys at this stage just having.
Right. And I do also see that out of these three guys, I immediately like, I mean, Jack the most, because he just seems like a more decent guy.
Yeah.
He's not as short-tempered, because at the end when Dave goes off to do his superhero stuff, he's all like, "Oh, and Davey, good luck," but he doesn't get to finish his sentence because Dave just flies off into the distance with his phallus stick, and then I'm sorry, I shouldn't call it that. It just came to my mind. They drew it in the picture, so I just see that he's trying to redeem himself with his brother. He's doing a lot of redeeming here in these two panels.
Yeah.
Do you call them panels? There's two pages?
The smaller squares on the page are the panels.
Okay.
And yeah, the pages are the pages.
Okay. So yeah, I do see that. So I guess for the knights, these are their characters. They are, you know, there's the old guy and there's childish Dave who dies, and then there's like Jack who does a lot of redeeming and owns an antique store.
And we get a lot of stuff in Jack's head. Like, I think that really helps flesh him out and show that he's not just a jerk. Like, we get that moment of him, like, where he is, does have, like, you know, awe that Davey has the guts to go in that stupid costume and wonder how many people are going to fall down laughing at the sight of him.
Right.
And, like, almost immediately, like, the next few stuff we get from him is just guilt.
And then for the
next several pages, we're like, in his head and kind of getting his energy and what he's doing, and he comes off much more likable on his own.
Right, exactly.
When he's with his family.
Yep. And then when you move on to the alley scenes, you see some, I don't know if they're important, supporting characters.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a notion, you get a sense of the kinds of dealings that Jack has in his, you know, in his life as a, you know, apart from his dad and brother.
It feels very earthy, you know, like kind of, I mean, I don't want to say like he's, you know, dabbling in illegal things or anything like that, 'cause that's not it, but it does feel like, you know, like he's accustomed to stuff that's a little bit more grimy. You know,
right.
The tattoo shops and the junk collecting and the antiques and the going through stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's presented with like a romanticized.
I see what you mean. I'm really curious about this panel in which Jack notices a new shop.
Mm.
But I guess it will come up in the end.
Da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah. He likes old things, so we get to know about Jack here. He likes old things. There's this old lady at the cleaners who gave her some stained garments that will take 40 years to remove. So he's like a guy.
Well, yeah. I took that as like he got like the shirts from somewhere. Like, he found them somewhere, like someone's attic or someone's, you know, like at some like swap meet type thing. And so now he's taken to get the shirts cleaned. So then he can get them, like, either sell them in his store.
Right. That didn't occur to me. I see.
That was my take on it.
And that makes more sense. Yeah.
Although, he probably has some stained shirts, too.
he does look like, I mean, even the way he dresses, I'm not sure how Dave dressed, but the fashion in this that they are sporting in the comics, I think you mentioned this, but it's very 90s. He's not like drab or anything, but he's not like super formal. So
Jack could have just stepped off the set of the movie
Swingers.
We'll have you watch it. It's great, but it's definitely like the 90s, like Like, he would have been listening to the throwback swing music in that bowling shirt. That's
awesome. Okay. Okay. I'm going to talk about the bad guys.
Before we get to the bad guys, just kind of move through the book here. Okay. Like, one of the reasons I really love about Tony Harris, the penciler, is, I mean, this is, especially compared to nowadays, but even later in the series, this is really, really rough Tony Harris work. Like, it's kind of, it was very angular, it's very blocky, and it's, but it's very angular and kind of blocky, but there's an intensity to it. And, like, the scene where he gets, where Jack gets the call from his dad, like, the look in the eyes and the kind of looking around, he does such a great job of just having the characters emote. And, like, you can look at their face and you can kind of see, like, the paranoia almost immediately in Jack. Like, he's shocked, but then he's got that look of, like, I gotta be careful myself. And just the tiredness on his dad's face. Not quite emotional, but just, he's weary.
Right. I see. Ah, I'm looking at that panel now, and yes, you definitely see a lot more lines on Ted's face.
Yeah.
And the cell phones are huge. Okay.
Oh, those old, the old cordless phones from inside the house?
Yeah. Yo. Oh, those are cordless phones
from the house? Yeah, we didn't have cell phones in 94.
Okay.
So you wanted to talk about the bad guys?
Yes, I was hoping to talk about the bad guys because they're intriguing. Bad guys. So Kyle, right?
Yeah.
What did I call him? Not a regular customer.
Yeah. With the fast talking and the crazy goggle glasses things.
Yeah. I like stuff like that. I like how they started out, you know, Kyle started out talking about Jade. And then Jack's like, oh, like, no, we don't have that here. You should go to another shop. And then, no, how about, I can't see this word. I think it's what, Bakelite or something?
Bakelite, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what that is, but I'm assuming it's some fictional substance. Yeah, so he starts off with that, and then the colors change very dramatically in the story.
Mm-hmm. Going from those, like, nighttime colors to suddenly it's like danger, reds, yellows, fire, and the energy just jumps off the pages here.
Yeah, and the dialogue as well, you see that immediately it is revealed that this bad guy is the guy who killed Dave.
And just the panel of Jack's face being reflected in Kyle's glasses.
Right.
Before the gunfire goes.
The details, like, if you look at the next page, I think, or the page after that, you see fire being drawn in Jack's eye. Like, you know, because the room is on fire, and on top of that, Kyle was insulting him, calling, you know, all the night men were women. Which is not a good insult, Kyle!
What's wrong with women? But yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, the not only is it the reflecting fire, but now he's angry because he's being insulted. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Like, that's probably the point where, like, I'll show you that I'm not a woman, which is not a good insult, but I'll show you that I can be Starman. I don't know, maybe that was...
And then we take your reading on it, and he goes for his phallus lollipop, which... Oh, man, this is a whole different comic now.
Hey, guys, it really just looked like one! I'm not, like, you know, that person who tells dirty jokes. I'm really not. I'm very far from that. But that's what it looks like, and I'm just gonna... I present the facts.
I'm gonna gloss over it. And so, like, I do like just a little bit of... when Jack is crawling away trying to get to the box with the gravity rod in it, that there's another box he's crawling past that has fragile written on it. I like that. I like things like that.
Ah, me too. If you see the red panel with the danger thing,
yeah,
that was a doll that was flung like in front of Jack because of the explosion.
Yup.
So you know, and you know that it's he owns a store, and you get reminded that this is his store in that moment. You know, because there's a doll, a random doll flying past him, and details like that they keep the reader informed of where they are. And then you see him when he enters into the room, you don't see all these things anymore. You see boxes, so you know, okay, different part of the store. This is some sort of storeroom. And then, you know, that's the thing I feel that's really nice about comics. When you really look at it, you really see the scene. You know, things like these don't happen in novels. So I like that.
And even this early in the series, I mean, Tony Harris does a great job of storytelling, of through locations and through settings, of just letting you see what happens that he's not drawing. Like, I mean, they say, like, that's one of the real tricks of drawing comics, is it's not just drawing what's on the panel, it's drawing it so that people see what's happening off-panel. Like, the motion, even of just him running, getting shot, and falling, we can see you can imagine his whole body movements as he gets shot to fall from standing, or getting shot and then falling face down. And it's so impressive.
I like that panel where he Kyle, he throws the grenade into the storeroom, and he, like, rounds a corner and grabs onto some shelves. You know, he rounds the corner and then, like, these shelves, he grabs onto it and then he hides behind them. I like the shelves. I don't know. That detail appeals to me. So. Oh, and that's the page where things are going through his head, and they are all his things. You know, the parts of this thing, what J. Allen St. John original, you know, gone, they're burning up, and you see that he really loves these things, because, okay, I'm going to tell a story. When I first bought my computer, my iMac, my husband was like, because we live on the first floor, we were like, wow, can you imagine if there was a flood, and it was up to, like, here, it was up to, you know, about a meter high, and everything, our new computer, our TV, our micro, everything will be ruined. And I was just thinking about that, and no! And the, you know, that sense of loss, and I can imagine how it feels to be Jack, and this, you know, when your store is burned down, it's just razed to the ground, and you have all these really cool and important and possibly valuable stuff,
and just the uniqueness of it all, the hunt of it all that he's had to put together, and all these things, and here it is just being destroyed.
Yeah,
and with really a nice use of the text, where they don't have him say, like, boy, these are the things that are important to, like, he calls them beautiful things, but he doesn't, like, spell out, like, wow, I am feeling a sense of loss. It's really economical in its language of just listing the different stuff that he has while it shows him getting through the actions. It really, you get that strong sense of loss even as he fights to stay alive.
Yes. I don't know, I was really moved by this page, because you just see this loss, this idea of loss, and trying to get away, and there's this bigger story that's happening, which is like there's his, you know, his dad is in danger, his brother has died, and then here's a bad guy who has come to kill him, and, like, in the midst of all this, you have him, oh, this is going, it's burning. And it just, you know, it's very immediate.
Yeah.
That you just feel a lot of things.
Mm. And even just having the text boxes, like, tilted, just adds to the panic of it.
Yeah, and the grenade, they drew the grenade twice, so like, it kind of flashes, there's a grenade, it's gonna explode.
Boom.
Yeah, so I really like that.
And then we flash, from the, from the scenes of motion and fire to just darkness.
Yeah, the bad guys.
And the bad guys coming together. And it just, they're just creepy.
Yeah.
We've got the girl with the stutter. You know, we've got, like, I can never quite figure out if on that bottom panel on that first page of them, if it's wine dripping from his finger or if he has a little bit of blood. Like, I can never quite, because why would you bleed in wine? But then again, why would you just, like, dab your finger in wine either? Like, none of those are things I would do.
Maybe it's not wine. Maybe that is, like, a goblet of blood. He's drinking. I told you they're vampires!
And then, well, if he's a vampire, he's an old, misshapen... He's got the old man spots. Got old man hands with really nice fingernails. Like, polished and shined and pointy. But he just looks... He doesn't have a body. He's just...
He's like Gandalf gone wrong.
Yeah, he's Saruman who lived. He is the mist. They do give his name here. And the mist smiles a little smile.
Oh! I didn't catch that he is the mist.
And the mist is a classic villain. Who I really, outside of his modern appearances either in this or in another series, I don't think I've ever read any of his classic appearances.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can't say much. What do you think of their family dynamic?
It's like, he's probably a monarch, and, to me it was, the bad guy here, Kyle, he was reporting to his dad, and being all like, his delight, Kyle's delight in that made me feel like he was going to tell his dad something great, and his dad would praise him, and he would be like, oh, dad praised me. And his dad did, and the mist did say, excellent.
So, you can even imagine it with that laughter, excellent.
Yeah. Excellent.
And I like about this is the green, like, adds like a sickly feel to it, which adds to the creepiness vibe. And yet, even with that, you know, you could make the argument that this scene of the Mist family, they seem to be much closer than the Night family earlier on in the issue.
Ah, that's a nice juxtaposition.
Yeah.
It's like, but a more loving, maybe, closer, maybe, but very, very creepy.
Very creepy, and kind like of...
He touches, the Mist touches the daughter's face.
Yeah. And
the way she looks up at him, you know, she looks up at him, and her face is like in like this picture of perpetual worry, like, and she goes like, yes, piece of brick struck his head or something like that. I can't help but think about, you know, little girls who have been kidnapped and shut in, you know, rooms for a long time. It's creepy.
They may be closer, but there's definitely a feeling of, like, cultishness to how they're supposed to revere father.
Yes.
And then the issue ends with Jack just kind of getting his head together and looking very, very broken.
Yeah. Boro-boro.
He's definitely boro-boro.
That's how he's saying Japanese. It's like, the thing is, it's very interesting how Harris? Mr. Harris?
Tony Harris, yeah.
Yes, how he draws blood. Yeah. It's like, if you see the very last page, when Jack's arm
Yeah.
It's not only blood that's dripping off him. It's like his skin is like it's melted skin. Yeah,
it's how it looks.
Yeah, so it's very cool.
And like you said, it ends with the revelation of, after all, with Davy dead, he's Starman, his father's Starman, and I'm not.
Yeah. Bah, bah, bah. Yeah. But the thing is, the effect of those words was... from the reader, and after it ends, and I'm not, then the reader, no, you are so Starman.
I saw the cover, you're Starman. But it's great, like the hero's journey story, where right now he's, you know, the hero in denial, and he's got to learn to be the hero, and so I mean, like, you know, I've said it many times, I've read this a lot. Probably this whole opus is one of my favorite comic series around, but don't let that influence you.
Okay.
What are your thoughts of this Zero issue? And then we can probably start wrapping it up.
My thought is, first, very creepy villains. Second, very gloomy. Yeah. So, you know, it's slightly depressing. It's not what I'm accustomed to, because I like really funny and happy stuff, but I guess I do want to know what happens, because there's a lot of family, I feel that there's a lot of familial ties, stories about familial ties that can potentially happen in this comic, so I like stories like that, but not exactly in this setting, but that's what's making me more interested in this.
And I can definitely say, without putting out too many, you know, reveals or anything, but Starman at its heart is a comic about family, about friendship. That's really what makes this such a worthwhile read is... You know, I mean, it's got some great stories in here, don't get me wrong, but it's really how the characters are built and how they relate to each other, and and the story of Starman and the story of Opal City and those who live there really is what makes this something that I keep going back to.
I see. And no spoilers, but when you talk about friendship, does this mean that there are going to be more characters coming up who will, you know, become best of friends with Jack?
There are definitely characters who he does make friends as the story goes on. Even in the next issue, we get several introductions of characters who make up a good portion of this comic's supporting cast. So this one, whereas it focused, like, primarily on the Knight family, especially Jack, and the Myth's crazy villain kids, it does get... The comic does spend lots of time with a varied amount of characters.
Okay.
Hopefully, listeners have enjoyed this episode. I'm hoping this holds our attention long enough to get through the whole opus. And I hope it holds your interest enough to help us figure out how to make this show better.
Yeah.
I had fun.
Me too. Nice. I always have fun.
All right, well, I guess on that note, all I can say is bye-bye.
Bye!
There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a Starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. It's only let the children lose it. Let the children use it, let all the children boogie.